Okay, we're going to start here on the top of Lamed Hey Omen Aleph. We ended off yesterday with the Gemara, with the Machloket about the duration of Benesh Mashot. And we had Amar Rabba, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, that it's Shlosha Chelkei Meal, that it's three parts of a meal, three quarters of a meal is the duration of Benesh Mashot. And then we have Rav Yosef, Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, that it's Shnei Chelkei Meal, which was two-thirds of a meal. So that was the Machloket, and then the Gemara jumps over to another Sugya, which we're going to do in a second. The question that's raised over here is that there is another Gemara that's found in Psachim. And the Gemara in Psachim says on Daf Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph that the duration of Benesh Mashot is actually four meal. So now you have a problem. Here, it says three-quarters of a meal. There it says four meal. No problem. It's two opinions. The problem is that they're both authored by Rav Yehuda. So now we have a stira in Rav Yehuda that says one place it says four meal, and the other place it says three-quarters of a meal. From that derives the very famous shita of the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam says, how do I reconcile between these two gemarot? So actually three ways to deal with it, and that actually results in the three different shitot about how we deal with sunset and tzeita kochavim. The Rabbeinu Tam shita, the most famous, under the name of the Rabbeinu Tam, but it was followed by all of Rishonei Ashkenaz. The Ramban is one of the big promoters of the shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, as well as Rashi. Rashi seems to in some way, not fully, but subscribe to what the Rabbeinu Tam is saying, which is that, as we mentioned yesterday, when we talk about Benesh Mashot, we talk about the end of the day. What determines what's the end of the day? Is it the sun leaving the horizon? That's the end of the day. Or is it the cessation of light and the horizon? That's what's the end of the day. So what the Rabbeinu Tam basically describes is that there are actually two shkiyot. There are two sunsets. There's a sunset when the sun leaves the horizon, and there's a second sunset when basically all the light is disappearing from the horizon. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, it's caused by the issue that we described yesterday, which is there's a dome over the earth, a kippah. The sun goes through what's called a chalon. This will become important again later in today's daf. Goes through a window through the chalon on the western side. It traverses the entire kippah, the dome, exits the other side of the dome, and then the sun returns to the eastern side over the top of the dome, and then to rise again in the morning by penetrating through the chalon, the window on the other side. And we obviously know that that's not the reality, but that's what causes the shita of Rabbeinu Tam to come about. In a second, I'll explain why it's still true today, even though Rabbeinu Tam is not correct in the understanding of the constellations and what's happening with the sun. But what the Rabbeinu Tam says, basically, is that there's something called Tchilat HaShkiyah and Sof HaShkiyah, or he gives other terms to it in other places in Shas, in Menachot, and other places about whether it's Mishkiyah or Shkiyah. There are different terminologies that he uses that the Gemara is using to describe it. And he claims that the first Shkiyah is when the sun leaves the horizon. And the time that the sun leaves the horizon until Tzeita Kochavim, that is four meal. A meal is approximately 18 minutes. So if you take 18 minutes times 4, you end up with 72 minutes. So that's the 72 minutes of the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says from the time that the sun leaves the horizon, what we call Shkia, until Tzeita Kochavim, that is 4 meal, 72 minutes. What about the 3-quarter meal that we're speaking about over here? The 3-quarter meal that we're speaking about over here is the tail end of that 4 meal. So you have 3-and-a-quarter meal, where, according to Rabbeinu Tam, the sun sets, but there's still light in the horizon. The tail end of that, the last 3-quarters of a meal, which is approximately 13.5 minutes, that is Benesh Mashot. Benesh Mashot, where the light is leaving the horizon, and before you hit the 3 stars, before you hit Tzeita Kochavim. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, it's still daytime until that second Shkia. And that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins, the way the Ramah paskins, everybody paskins, that the end of the day is actually 58.5 minutes after what we call sunset. That is still called daytime. And that's the practice today amongst the Hasidim, any of those that still follow the Rabbeinu Tam, they daven mincha even after Shkia, because according to them, it's still daytime. There are those that wrote that in general, the Rishonim only used it, the Chumrah, not the Kula. And that was a much later development. The Bach himself goes wild about this, that he says, I never heard of this, that people are not starting Shabbat. They go out to the marketplaces, and they're doing business, and they don't start Shabbat until that later time of the Rabbeinu Tam. Says, we never heard of that in our lifetime. That until that time, it was only done the Chumrah, which was the way the Ramah paskins, the verse of Gabe Shabbat. Shabbat starts by Shkia, and ends, like Rabbeinu Tam, 72 minutes later. So we shnei tzadim l'chumra, which is that we say when the sun really sets on the horizon, that's it. We wait to the exit of Shabbat until the 72 minutes of the Rabbeinu Tam. But there are those, and the practice amongst the Hasidim today, that they, even the Kula, they did it time in the Bach, he starts to cry about this, that people are doing this. But it seems to come, it's a widespread minhag. I think there might be proof to it in Rashi and Brachot. He also thinks that it doesn't start until that later Shkia. But basically, what you have here is that the day does not end until the second Shkia. The Gemara is describing that Shkia is just when the sun leaves the horizon. That doesn't have halakhic implications. The halakhic implications are the second Shkia, which is 15 and a half minutes later, 3 1/4 meal later. Then the last 3/4 meal that we're speaking about here are the tail end of the 72 minutes. And that's Ben Shmashot according to the Rabbeinu Tam. That's how the Rabbeinu Tam reconciles between the 4 meal in Psachim and the 3/4 meal over here. There's another Shita of the Urayim. The Urayim actually solves the problem in a similar way to Rabbeinu Tam, but he actually says that the 3/4 meal actually starts before the sun actually sets on the horizon. The 3/4 meal ends with the sunset leaving the horizon. So he has the same 4 meal as Rabbeinu Tam, but his starting point is later. And that's to do when the sun reaches Rosh Ha'ilanot. It reaches the top of the trees. And he calls that sunset. That's the first sunset, basically. When if you're standing and the trees are there, the sun goes below the tops of the trees. That's sunset number one. 3/4 meal.
13 1/2 minutes
later, it's going to leave the horizon, the sun, and that'll be the second sunset. That's the 3/4 meal. And then the 4 meal is the time counted from the beginning until when it gets dark outside. So for the Urayim, sunset actually happens prior to what we call sunset today. Part of the reason why we light candles prior to Shkia, 18 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever the minhag is to incorporate the Shita of the Urayim. Is to deal with this Urayim. Because if we were to light candles close to Shkia or 5 minutes before Shkia, according to the Urayim, it's already Shabbos. It's already past this Shkia. So in order to incorporate this Urayim, we light earlier than that, to have Tosefet Shabbat on the Urayim, and also to incorporate his Shita, in case he's right, we actually light beforehand. The third Shita is the Shita of the Gra. The Gra, who believes there's a Gemara, which we spoke about on Daf Bet Amud Bet, in the Gemara and Brachot, which seems to indicate that the Ben Shmashot here is determined by the 3/4 meal. 3/4 meal is Ben Shmashot, means from the time the sun leaves the horizon, 3/4 meal later,
13 1/2 minutes
later, most 16 minutes, 17 minutes, depending where you are, that is the end of Ben Shmashot, and that's Seita Kochavim according to the Gra. Now, that's the power of the Gra, despite the fact that the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah passed in like the Rabbeinu Tam, all of Rishonei Ashkenaz, the Ramban, sees a very, very strong support for this position of the Rabbeinu Tam. In the end, we paskin like the Gra. And that's the power of the Gra, that sometimes, even against the Ramah, that we paskin like the Gra, that Shkia is the end of the day. And then, in Eretz Yisrael, especially the practice is that they keep the Gra, that Seita Kochavim is 18 minutes later, 20 minutes later. And the Gra notes already, and this is noted by some others, at that time already, the Urayim notes it a little bit, that it has to do with where you are, in terms of your latitude on the earth, about the duration of the Ben Shmashot. Right, so very good. So there is speculation that the Rabbeinu Tam Shita and all of the Rishonei Ashkenaz who followed the position of the Rabbeinu Tam were heavily influenced by their latitude. And since their latitude was so far north, for them, the duration of their Ben Shmashot was larger. And because of that, right, they had the Shita Rabbeinu Tam made sense. But for someone who was in Eretz Yisrael, the Shita Rabbeinu Tam makes no sense. The problem with that thesis is that the Ramban is one of the adamant supporters of the Rabbeinu Tam. The Ramban lives in Spain, and he is almost on the same latitude as Eretz Yisrael, from the earth, and he's a huge supporter of the Rabbeinu Tam. So that undermines that thesis or that theory that it was all based on the fact that they were so far north that they believed in the Rabbeinu Tam. But it's clear that that is true. Those that speculate that has to do with further north, so they want to suggest that the Rabbeinu Tam Shita has to then be adjusted when you're in other places. And that might have a lot of impact. It already starts to come up and then was discussed over and over again about this idea of the fact that Ben Shmashot actually changes depending on your latitude. And because of that, the question of Sak comes up in this way. You can pass them like the Gra and just say that Shkia and then Ben Shmashot. The Gra already recognizes that there's a difference in your location. The Gra is pretty far north. And he says that when we determine the Ben Shmashot, it depends on where you are. That has to do with the time of the year, and your latitude. And so the Gra already recognizes that there's a difference. And the Gra sets his time based on where he is, recognizing that in other latitudes the time would be different. That's why there are so many shittot in the Gra. It goes from like 18 minutes to 24 minutes, because it depends on how you gauge the latitude. So you have to determine, first of all, who do you paskin, like Gra, the Rabbeinu Tam, so on and so forth. The second thing you need to do is, once you paskin like any of those shittot, how do you calculate the shita? So for the Rabbeinu Tam, there are two ways to calculate it. There's the fixed 72 minutes for Rabbeinu Tam based on his shita here. But the truth is that the Rabbeinu Tam shita with 72 minutes really does not make sense in Eretz Yisrael. It's clear that 72 minutes after Shkia in Eretz Yisrael, I mean, you're way into Tzeit HaKochavim. You're not even close. Whereas, further north, if you were in latitudes much further north, 72 minutes might be a good gauge. So the question of why they went to a fixed time might be, they went to a fixed time because they wanted to incorporate everything. Problem with something with saying that is that the Rabbeinu Tam is commenting on the Gemara. The Gemara is in Bavel, which isn't as far north as the Rabbeinu Tam, and the sheet of 72 minutes comes out of the Gemara. So are they giving a standard for everybody, and that covers everybody? That's the longest it could be, and that covers everything. Right, it's a low plug, or maybe we should change it based on where you are. And so that comes up with what they call the Rabbeinu Tam based on your latitude. You can alter the Rabbeinu Tam, which will change based on where you are and where your latitude is. And then it comes back to what I discussed before, that even though the Rabbeinu Tam Shita is mufrach because of his reality, there's no kippah, the sun doesn't go through the kippah, the truth is that we have the same phenomenon today. And that phenomenon has to do with the way the sun sets and the horizon. That's the atmosphere. The atmosphere reflects the light of the sun, as long as the sun has a direct line to the atmosphere. As long as the sun can see the atmosphere directly in a straight line, it will keep light in the horizon. So what ends up happening is the sun sets when we're in a... I mean, technically, the sun doesn't set. We're moving, not the sun. I'm just, for sake of understanding, I'm going to say that the sun is moving, not us. So when the sun goes over the horizon, there's still light in the sky because, in terms of the ball of the earth, the sun hasn't reached a point where it no longer has a direct line to our atmosphere. It will at some point get far enough along where it has no direct line to the atmosphere, there'll be no more light. That is equal everywhere in the earth. Everywhere in the earth, that distance between the time the sun's setting and the where it can shed light on the atmosphere, it's 18 degrees, or it's 2,003 kilometers. It's a strip, basically, you can make it, it's a strip of distance that encompasses or covers these 18 degrees. So once the sun moves beyond 18 degrees, there's no more light in the atmosphere because there's no direct light. Now, what ends up happening is because the earth is not sitting straight on its axis. It actually sits on an angle on its axis. So because of that, where that line is or where it happens differs depending where you are. I mean, it depends on summer or winter. And that line at the 66.5 degree angle on the earth, because the earth isn't straight, that's where that line sits, no matter what. But, for instance, when it comes to the summertime, when the northern hemisphere that the sun's here, the entire North Pole is beyond this line. That's why the sun doesn't set in the North Pole, or it never has this period of where the sun leaves the horizon. And when you go to the wintertime, it's the opposite way around. Because of the angle of the earth, and where this is set on the earth, and where the sun is relative to the earth, then it ends up that the entire North Pole is covered by darkness and never crosses the line on the other side. So because of this, what ends up happening is in different latitudes, because the angle that you're on also determines how far in the sky or the sun can reach you. So even though 18 degrees is the last point at which the sun will cast light on the atmosphere, depending where you are, meaning how far north you are or how far south you are, will determine what you can see of those 18 degrees. And that's why it'll be longer or shorter your ben hashmashot, whether it's the summer or the winter, even though, in terms of the physics, it's always the same 18 degrees. So north and south will determine the length of the ben hashmashot, as well as the amount of time that you can still see light in the horizon. And so because of that, even if you paskin like the Rabbeinu Tam, or even if you paskin like the Gra, you have to do a second calculation possibly, which is to determine, when you paskin like them, what's the reality of that? How far north are you? How far are you in Eretz Yisrael? Maybe you could paskin like Rabbeinu Tam in Eretz Yisrael, but you would have to adjust the Rabbeinu Tam for the latitude of Eretz Yisrael versus the latitude of where the Rabbeinu Tam lived in northern France. And once you do that, it would reduce the Rabbeinu Tam to probably a much more reasonable, like 48 minutes, 50 minutes, which would be a much more reasonable number within Eretz Yisrael. The same is true of the Gra. It has to adjust. That's why the Gra has a roughly, 18 to 24 minutes, because it might have to do with where you are latitude-wise. The Gra, when he says that his number of the three-quarter meal, question where that's located. Is that only in Eretz Yisrael? That means when you're in Chutz Laaretz, when your places at latitudes are further north, maybe you have to extend that duration of the Gra. Right? I'm just bringing it up here because this is the sugya. This is where the Rabbeinu Tam, the stira, and creates the sugya. But you have all these different shitot. And then within, even after you have those shittot, you have to determine how to calculate which one you want based on your latitude or whether that makes a difference. And there are some that believe that you ignore the latitudes, and the number is given for whether it be no time, and that incorporates everybody, the low plug type of argument. Or do we actually adjust it based on your latitude? You can't have a fixed time when Shabbat goes out. Now, obviously that's difficult. That makes it hard. We don't want to start adjusting these things because it's very hard for people, especially before the modern calendar. It's very hard for people to calculate these numbers. So they just said 72 minutes, 42 minutes. They just give you times that are fixed and everybody can use them. And that way it'll be equal for everyone. So again, these are the issues about today, about how we paskin. Again, we generally follow the gra here in Eretz Yisrael, which means that shkia is the end of the day. And then tzeitu kochavim, we wait. Most people will daven after, for Kriyat Shema, 24 minutes or so. They'll daven Kriyat Shema. The only time we have an exception for that is on Motzei Shabbat, where they wait a little longer. They wait 34, 36 minutes for other considerations to make sure that they're really past the Seita Kol Chavim. All right, so now the Gemara said here at the top of Lamed Heyom and Aleph that machlok between Rabba and Rabbi Yosef was true in Shabbat, where Rabba has a longer time and Rabbi Yosef has a shorter time. But the opposite is true by Kaveret, that in Kaveret, their shitot are reversed, where Rab is going to have a smaller shiur, and Rabbi Yosef is going to have a bigger shiur. Kaveret here, or this din of Kaveret, we've mentioned it before, it's basically a cylinder of sort. A Kaveret's also a beehive. Cylinder of sort that's made out, we're going to see in a second, a Mishnah from Kelim and Ohalot, that they're made out of kanim, or made out of kash, made out of straw, or made out of reeds. And they can also make it out of wood, which would be the equivalent of a bucket. B'chilufa b'chalta. The opposite is true by a chalta, which Rashi translates as a kiveret. Dama rabo. Chalta batre kure. If you have a chalta that can hold two kur, shari l'tultula. You're allowed to carry it on Shabbat, because it still is a kli. Still a utensil that can be used on Shabbat. Bat late kure, asur l'tultula. If it has three kur, if it holds three kur in it, it's too heavy now. It's no longer considered to be a kli, a utensil, and you can't carry it on Shabbat because it's almost as if it's affixed in place. It's so heavy that you don't normally carry it. Since you don't normally carry it, it's not something that you would consider to move on Shabbat. Therefore, it becomes mukseh because it's designated to its place. Yosef Amar, bat latekure namishari. Three kur, you're also allowed to carry it. But arba akure osur. Four kur, you're not allowed to carry it. So you see here, Rabbi Yosef's shira is big, whereas Rabba's is smaller. So that's what the Gemara meant, bechilufa. Nothing to do with the exact shiurim, just saying that by Venish Mashot, Rabba has the bigger shiur. By Kaveret, Rabba has the smaller shiur. Amar Abai, by Mine Demar. Abai says that I posed this question to Mar being his Rebbe Rabba. So Abai posed this question to Rabba, Bishat Maaseh, in a time that I was actually wanted to do it. It was Alocha Lamaaseh. Vafilu Batrei Kurei Lo Sharili. Even an item that had two kur in it, he did not permit me to carry. Come on, because both Rabbi Yosef and Rabba both said that two kur was all right to carry. So now at two kur, Rabba's saying to him, don't do it. So who's that like? It's like this Kahai Ditznan. It's like this Mishnah that we found in Kelim and Olot. Kaveret HaKash, Kaveret HaKanim, whether it's made out of this, Kaveret is made out of straw, it's made out of reeds. Ubor Sfin Alexandrit, or the water cistern in an Alexandrian boat. If they went on the water for longer durations of time, they didn't have any drinking water, because it's obviously salt water out there, they needed a water cistern on the boat. So this water cistern was made out of this Kaveret, again the equivalent of what we'd call a bucket. It had wooden staves around it, and they tied them together and had a floor to it, and they put the water in there to store the water on the boat. Sheish lahem shulaim. If they have a base, the afalpi is knocked out. It's not in the Mishnah. You can see that here, the girsa, the gra takes out the word afalpi. Sheish lahem shulaim vein machzikot mem sa'ah balach. They hold 40 sa'ah in liquids. Shein kuraim biyavesh, which is the equivalent to 2 kur when in dry goods. Tehorim. They are considered to be tahor. There's a basic principle, again, I mentioned this before, that the Gemara, when it has to determine things about Shabbat, has to look for paradigms somewhere else. We want to know on Shabbat if something's considered to be a kli. Is it a utensil or not a utensil? How do I know? Shabbat doesn't give me a definition of utensils. So what do? I have to go somewhere else. Usually the somewhere else is Tuma. By Tuma and Tahara, Kelim can accept Tuma. Items that are affixed to the ground generally do not accept Tuma v'Tahara. So the difference between something being a utensil and not being a utensil is whether it's carried normally or not. And that's what this Mishnah is discussing. If the item is so big that when it's filled, people cannot carry it, that is not considered to be a keli anymore. Keli is only something that can be nital, melei verikan, full and empty. It's based on the juxtaposition of sukkim to the word sak. Just like a sack can be carried when it's full and empty, so too any keli that's found has the ability to carry it whether it's full or empty. So over here, the Gemara is giving you that threshold. What is the threshold? That if you have a kverta kash, kverta kanim, a bor svinal exantrit, sheesh lem shulayim vei machzikon mem sa'a belach. They hold 40 sa'a of liquids, or purayim biyavesh, or two kor in dry goods, tehorim. Why are they tahor? Because they're no longer a kli. They don't have a classification of a kli. If they don't have a classification of kli in tuma and tahara, that's what we're looking for, a definition of a kli. If it's not defined as a kli, then a Shabbat you can't carry it. Here we see the threshold is two kor, purayim. And that is what Rabba was saying to Abaye. Rabbi, when he asked him, can I move this because it's machzik tukur, he didn't let him do it because of this Mishnah. Once you hit tukur, that's not considered to be a kli and tuma. It's not considered to be a kli and tuma. You can't carry it on Shabbat. Now, why is there a difference between liquids and dry goods? A kur is equal to 30 sa'ah. Kur is equal to 30 sa'ah, so kuraim, tukur would be 60 sa'ah. So that means that in liquids, you would have 40 sa'ah, in dry goods, you would have 60 sa'ah. The difference between them is what Abai is about to say here is Amar Abai Shmamina Hai Gutsha Tiltahavi. The ability to pile on the top above the surface of the kli in dry goods adds on an additional third to the capacity. So for instance, liquids, if you pour them to the top or the brim, they have a little bit of surface tension, but after that they start to overflow. So you're limited by the kli itself. On the other hand, by dry goods, you can stack on top. Even after you've gone above the brim of the kli, you keep stacking it up towards the middle, and you have a pile on top. How much is that pile equal to? Abai says it's a third. How do I know that? Because the Mishnah says, liquids, it's 40 sa'ah. Dry goods, 60 sa'ah. So the additional 20 sa'ah that you're adding on top, which is what we call a third milabar, right? One third milabar, which is equivalent to a half milagav, what we would call 50% today. You have an increase of 50% of the capacity when you stack on top, when the dry goods can sit on top of the brim. Now obviously it has to do with the dimensions or the way that the kli is made, and Rashi points out that their kelim were like the yam of Shlomo, which are wide, that their height was equal to their radius, which makes them very low and wide kelim. And because of that, you have a lot of surface area to put the dry goods on top of it. So obviously, the capacity would change depending on the dimensions of the kli. So Rashi tells us the dimensions here, that the height equal to the radius, that gives you a lot of width in the kli, and that's why the top, the dry goods on top, can stack on top. And that's what Abaye says, Shvamina, I gutsha tilta havi. Abaye chazi l'rova, gadave l'marav. So Abaye saw that Rava was peering or looking out to the western side to determine when it was nightfall. So Amalei, v'atanya kozman shipnei mizrach madimim. Didn't we say in yesterday's daf that the determination of what the light in the sky is, as long as the eastern side is still light? Why are you looking in the west? That's obviously why Rava's looking in the west. Rava's looking in the west because it's where the sun sets. But he says, then wait a minute, the Braita told us that it's talking about the east is where you have to look for the light. Samalei, misavad pnei mizrach mamash. He says, no, you think it means literally the eastern side? Oh, panim hamadimim et mizrach. It's not literally the eastern side, but rather the side that causes light to be on the eastern side. What's that? That's the western side. Because we know the sun sets on the west, and the sun setting on the west is what puts the light into the eastern side. So it's not literally the eastern side that you need to look at. You need to look at the western side, which is the source of the light for the eastern side. Ikadamre Rava Chazi Abaye Kadave the Mizrach. So the case is the opposite now, where Rava sees Abaye looking into the east. So Amalei Misavrad Pnei Mizrach Mamash. What do you think? It means the eastern side, literally. Panim ha-medimim et mizrach. Face that lights the mizrach, which means the western side. So either the case was Rava was looking to the west, and Abaye is questioning him, and then Rava explains that it's really west, not east. Or it was Abaye was looking to the east, and Rava's correcting him and saying, don't look east, look west. The simanech, and this is why it was important what we were discussing before, kavto. The siman is kavto, which means chalon, the window. Simanech kavto, chalon, which is that when the sun leaves the horizon, it goes through the chalon, which as we described before, that reality of what they think happened with the sun. And so because of that, if you look in the two Rashi's before that, he says, l'erev chamashukat b'marav, that it goes sets in the west, v'zureya chama madimim et ha-mizrach. And the rays of the sun light up the east, kechalom, like a window. When it enters into the window, the light that is cast from the window shines on the opposite wall or the opposite side. What Rashi is basically describing here is that the reality that I described to you for the Rabbeinu Tam is that when the sun leaves the horizon, it's entering through a window of the kippah to pass through the dome. And when it enters in that window, it shines across to the opposite side, on the eastern side. And that's what Rashi is describing over here. Again, the same reality that the Rabbeinu Tam thought, Rashi is using that same idea of the kippah being a dome, and the sun is penetrating through the dome to return to the other side. So when it enters into the chalon, then the light is cast on the other side. And that's the hint here, that the sun sets on the west. It's entering the western chalon, but it casts light on the eastern side. And that's what it means, that it's the light that's cast from the west onto the eastern side, but you should be looking west to determine when the light leaves the horizon. All right, so now the Gemara continues. Rabbi Nechemiah Omer, Yedei She'alech Adam Mishetishkach Hamach Hatzi Mil. Rabbi Nechemiah believed that the duration of Benesh Mashot was half a mil, the amount of time that you could walk half a mil. Amrim Chanina, Arotzei Leda Shirosh Rabbi Nechemiah. How do you determine what the Shir of Rabbi Nechemiah is? Yaniach Chama Berosh HaKarmel. When he's standing on the top of the Carmel Mountain, by the Carmel Spa, Vired, Vidbol Bayam, he should go down the mountain, Vidbol Bayam, and then take a dip in the ocean below, V'yaleh, and then come back up. V'zehu shiro shel Rabbi Nechemiah. That is the shiur of Rabbi Nechemiah. So the amount of time it would take you to be at the top of the Carmel when you can still see the sun. You're high up, so you can see the sun still. You'll descend down to the ocean, go to the mikveh, and then come out. According to Rashi, by the time you come out, it's over. Come out, that's the end of Benesh Mashot. That's what Rashi says. By the time he comes out, it's already nighttime. Tosafot objects to that because he says it sounds like from this that this would be a kosher tevila. So basically what he says is that you come out of the ocean, that's the sunset, and then by the time you walk back or you return or you get out, then that'll be the end of the chatzimil, that'll be the end of the tzeit kochavim, in order that the tevila be kosher. The only way for the tevila to be kosher is if you go to the mikveh while it's still daytime, and the sun sets after you come out of the mikveh. According to Rashi, the sun already sets, and then that's the end of Benesh Mashot when you're coming out of the mikveh. So that's a little nuance or difference between them. Alright, so then the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Chiya rotzeh lirot be'erah Miriam. Anyone wants to see Be'er of Miriam. Be'er of Miriam was the water source that traveled with Bnei Yisrael on the Midbar, b'schut Miriam. Yaleh the Rosh of Carmel, you should go up to the top of Carmel, v'yitzpeh, and then look out. V'yireh kemin kvara, you'll see some sort of item that looks like a sieve, b'yam, in the middle of the ocean. V'zehoi b'yirah shel Miriam. That's where Hashem put it, that's where it's in Gniza. Rav, mayan mitteltel tahor. A mayan, a spring that moves around, that travels with you, that is tahor. V'zehu b'yirah shel Miriam. And what's the definition of a mayan that travels with you? That's b'yirah shel Miriam. It's not really a practical halacha. Only happened with the Jews in the Midbar. But that's considered to be a mayan that you can go to the mikveh in and you'd be tahor. Even though it's moving. It's not a fixed mayan. It's not a fixed spring. But that's a spring that moves around. So if you want to see this, what looks like the b'yirah shel Miriam, you go up to the Carmel and look out onto the ocean. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Ben Hashmashot de Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, the Ben Hashmashot of Rav Yehuda, which we said before is Machlok Din Rab and Rav Yosef, as to whether that's 3/4 of a meal or half a meal. That Ben Hashmashot of Rav Yehuda, Kohanim Tov Limbo. Kohanim go to the mikveh in it. So Rav says, Laman. According to who? Ilayim of the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda himself, Sveikuhu. That can't be. The Kohanim can't go to the mikveh. Kohanim have to go to the mikveh before sunset. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that time period of Benesh Mashot is a safek. You can't go to the mikveh anymore. That you're not certain then that you've gone to the mikveh during the day. Ella, Benesh Mashot Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yossi, Kohanim Tov Limbo. Benesh Mashot of Rabbi Yehuda, for Rabbi Yossi, is still daytime. It says, Pshita, of course. We just saw before that Rabbi Yossi's Shita is that Benesh Mashot is keherifayim. It's like the blink of an eye. So, of course, you can go to the mikveh during the time of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi has a time period of Benesh Mashot that is minuscule. So, of course, you can go to the mikveh, it's still daytime. The Gemara says, no. Ma'od etema Benesh Mashot Rabbi Yossi mishach shaykh b'Rabbi Yehuda. You would have thought, when is that threshold of Rabbi Yossi? All Rabbi Yossi says that it's keherifayim, it's a blink of an eye. But when is that blink of an eye? We don't know when he thinks that threshold is. We would have thought that maybe it's in the middle of Rabbi Yehuda's Benesh Mashot. The answer of the Gemara is no. That Rabbi Yossi's Benesh Mashot threshold only happens after the completion of Rabbi Yehuda's Benesh Mashot. So that means after 3/4 of a meal or half a meal, once Rabbi Yehuda's Benesh Mashot is over, that's when the threshold of Rabbi Yossi is. So it's not incorporated in Rabbi Yehuda at all. Kamash Malon, the Shalom Benesh Mashot Rabbi Yehuda, Vader Matkil Benesh Mashot Rabbi Yossi. Benesh Mashot Rabbi Yehuda ends, and then only then is the Benesh Mashot Rabbi Yossi. If that's the case, you can go to the mikveh on the Benesh Mashot of Rabbi Yehuda according to Rabbi Yossi. It's still daytime for Rabbi Yossi. All the way through, what Rabbi Yehuda calls Benesh Mashot is considered to be absolute daytime for Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi only believes the threshold between day and night happens after Rabbi Yehuda. Now, whether it happens immediately after, or maybe sometime after that, That Tosafot discusses and is unclear about how far afterwards it happens. But we know for sure that if you went to the mikveh during that three-quarter meal or half meal, depending on what you think the duration of Rabbi Yehuda is, it's daytime for Rabbi Yossi. And therefore, it works, and it's a good mikveh for the Kohanim, and the sun only sets after that point in time. Amar Rabbi Rechana, Rabbi Yochan, Alochok Rabbi Yehuda l'inyan Shabbat, Alochok Rabbi Yossi l'inyan Truma. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda for Shabbat and like Rabbi Yossi for Truma. Gemara says, Bishlama halacha Rabbi Yehuda l'inyan Shabbat l'chumra. Obviously, what we're talking about here in Rabbi Yochanan is a safek. He doesn't know who the halacha is like, so we're going to go to l'chumra. So I understand by Rabbi Yehuda, you're going to go to l'chumra and you're going to subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda. Well, that's only true on one end of Shabbat. That's on Erev Shabbat. If you subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda on Erev Shabbat, then you're going to l'chumra because then you start your Shabbat earlier. But if you subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda on the Motzei Shabbat, then you'll end up with ending Shabbat earlier. Tosafot points out that we're only talking about Erev Shabbat here. That we're choshesh for Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore we'll start Shabbat before the Ben Hashmashot of Rabbi Yehuda. But obviously on Motzei Shabbat, we will end after Rabbi Yossi's Ben Hashmashot. We're going to have to subscribe to Rabbi Yossi. But the Gemara says, what's the chumrah of waiting for Rabbi Yossi by Truma? If you say for Tzvila, Sveikai, that's actually a Kula. You're saying that the Kohanim can go to the mikveh all the way through the Ben Hashmashot of Rabbi Yehuda. That's not the Chumra, that's a Kula. Saying that they can go to the mikveh even when it's Ben Hashmashot to Rabbi Yehuda, that's still a Safek Zman. Doesn't make sense. Ela Lachilat Truma. It's coming to teach us when you can eat Truma. You can only eat Truma. It's only considered to be nighttime for eating of Truma by the Kohanim after the Ben Hashmashot of Rabbi Yossi. That's the later time. That they only eat after the Ben Hashmashot of Rabbi Yossi. So basically, you take the Chumrah on both Tzadim, which is we're going to start Shabbat before the Ben Hashmashot of Rabbi Yehuda, and we're going to only allow you to eat Truma after the Ben Hashmashot of Rabbi Yossi. The same would be true on Motzei Shabbat. And what? If you look in Tosavot, it says, Hiksha Arab Parat, B'Shabbat Gufei Avi Matzah L'Minkot Halacha. You could do the same thing in Shabbat or Truma. You can say you're going to go to the mikveh until the time of Rabbi Yehuda, Ben Hashmashot Rabbi Yehuda. You can only eat the Truma after the Ben Hashmashot of Rabbi Yossi, Shabbat. You have to start Shabbat before the Ben Hashmashot of Rabbi Yehuda. You can only end Shabbat after the Ben Hashmashot of Rabbi Yossi. You could have said it even in Shabbat or in mikveh. The answer is near the read. The Nechel Eshminan Rabuta. The Chiddush is Afilu B'Shabbat Chamir Mekel Rabbi Yossi. That even in Shabbat, where we're choshesh for the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, there Rabbi Yossi is making and says you don't have to start Shabbat until later. To say that their opinions hold throughout the spectrum of halacha. Not just in Shabbat, not just in Shumat, it's everywhere. We, who don't know who to paskin like, we go to Safek, and therefore we're going to be on both tzadim. We're going to say start Shabbat early, end it late, go to the mikveh early, only eat Shuma late, because we're being choshesh for both of them. Now we enter into the world of the Amoraim. And the Amoraim now changed the whole Lashon to something that we know today, which is Amar Yehuda Mishmuel, Kochav Echad Yom. One star, that's daytime. Shnayim, two stars, is Ben Hashmashot. Shlosha, three stars, that's night. So that's the famous idea that when you see three stars in the sky, that's considered to be nighttime. That's Tzeit HaKochavim. Tanya Nami Yochiv, a brayta that supports that, Kochav Echad Yom. Shnayim, Ben Hashmashot. Shlosha, Laila. So now, Amar Rabbi Yossi. Lav kochavim dolim anirim biyom. Not that they have big stars that you can see during the daytime. Velo kochavim tanim sheinim irim ela b'layla. We're not talking about small stars that you can only see at night. Ela beinonim. We're talking about these middle-sized stars. Problem is, when is that determined by? One star during the day. Wait, is that what determines what's considered a big star? When you see the three stars at night, and it's completely night, you can see the little stars, that's what determines little. Then when is benoni determined by? How do we determine when it's considered to be a middle-sized star? Somewhat difficult because he has three periods of time here. It's Yom, Ben Hashmashot, and Laila. At which period of time are we talking about these Benonim that they're visible? When are they visible, these Benonim? So that's somewhat difficult in this Shito. What seems to be coming out here, the change in the definition, which is that until now the Tanaim talked about either distance as being the determination of when Ben Hashmashot was, or they used the sky, meaning that how much light was left in the sky. Over here we all of a sudden start talking about stars. Stars become the determining factor. And what's interesting here is that you could really understand, based on the creation in Parshat Bereshit, what it's speaking about. It says that the Shemesh is the Mshelet Bayom. The sun rules during the daytime. It says that the Yareach v'Kochavim, they rule during the night. So we know when the sun is out, that's called daytime. When the Kochavim are out, when the stars are out, that's called nighttime. So that's what we know. That's daytime is sun, nighttime is stars. The problem is that there's a period of time where they both rule, that the sun is still there, and the stars are also there, or the moon is also there. You have a period of time where there's overlap, and that's what the problem is here. The problem of Ben Hashmashot is that you have a period of time when both the sun and the moon and the stars are visible, or the light of the sun is still visible, but the stars are already coming out. And then during that overlap, that's the question. When does the rule of the sun end and the rule of the stars and the moon begin? Because of that period of time that's the overlap, that's what we're trying to determine over here. And so here, Amar Rabbi Shmuel says, it's the stars that determine. As long as the stars aren't there, that's the rulership of the sun. Once the stars come out, that's already considered to be the nighttime. So stars are the determining factor, and that's nighttime. As long as it's not stars, it's not nighttime, that means it's part of the purview of the day. Right, so that's clear, the problem, that the inexactitude of what they did, and there's a claim, I can't remember, 1800s, somebody wrote basically that they couldn't come up with exact times. This person goes, sets out to do measurements of Rabbeinu Tam, and he can't come out to 72 minutes. And he says part of that's based on the clock problem, that they didn't have the clocks or the determination based on clocks, and therefore they couldn't calculate it properly. And the 72 minutes is actually, even though the Rabbeinu Tam is a mistake, because even where the Rabbeinu Tam lived, you can't get to 72 minutes. There is a factor here, and that's why they're using other items. They're using constellations, things that were available to them to determine about clock. Gemara's going to ask in 1 second your question, what happens if it's a cloudy day? That's the biggest problem. Cloudy days for them was everything. All these markings, except for the distance ones, are determined by being able to look in the sky, see light, see stars. What happens when it's a cloudy day? So, Amar Rabbi Yossi Brev Zavta, Oseh Melacha B'Shnei Ben Shmashot. Someone who does Melacha over two twilights, meaning twilight going into Shabbat, the twilight going out of Shabbat, chayav chatat mimonoshach. He's definitely chayav chatat, because either it's day or it's night. And if he did it both going into Shabbat and after Shabbat, he was definitely on Shabbat in one of them. Right? So this really goes together with Rashi's shita, that ben shmashot is either day or night. It could be either one. And even Rashi has that interesting shita, the same time in ben shmashot, and one day could be day and one could be night. We saw that yesterday. There is a third shita in ben shmashot, which is that ben shmashot is neither night nor day. It's a birya b'fnei atzma. It's yom v'laila, day and night. It's not day, it's not night, it's day-night. It's a combination of both of them. And according to that, it would make it more difficult, this idea that you could be chayav chatat, if you were overlapping in both periods, because there might be a period of time which is neither day nor night. It could be then that it still has shaychut to Shabbat, so on and so forth, but at least the Rishonim here, Rashi and Tosfot, seem to say that it's clearly either yom or laila. There are other Rishonim who want to suggest that there is this twilight, real twilight, which is that it's not day, not night. And it's a combination of both of them. Your question. You can't do all these calculations, the Rabbanan. When the sun reaches the tops of the trees, light the candles. What about a cloudy day? Now it's a cloudy day, he doesn't know when the sun's at the top of the trees. Again, this is the Urayim Shita, that the idea that sunset being at the top of the trees, right, that's based on this Gemara over here, that at the tops of the trees, there's another Gemara later on, that they used to bring in Shabbat when the sun hit the tops of the trees. So then, b'yom me'unan, my, what do you do? B'mato, in the city, chaze tarnagola. Look at the chickens when they go up to roost. B'dabra, if you're out in the field, look for the orb of the ravens. When they go to roost, that's already nighttime. So as they're ascending to roost, that's the time that you should light the candles. Inami ad'ane, this is Aaron, which is a type of grass that moves with the sun. Wherever the sun is, the grass moves. So in the middle of the day, it's upright. In the morning, it faces towards the east. And at nighttime, it faces towards the west. So when the grass or this plant, whatever it is tilted all the way to the west, then you know that it's time to light the candles. Right? Tan Rabbanan, Sheish Tkiot Tokim Erev Shabbat. You blow 6 Tkiot on Erev Shabbat. Rishona, the first Tkiah, is Lavtila Ta'am Mimlacha Shibisadot, is to stop the people doing work out in the fields. Shnia. The second one is Lavtil Ir Bechaniot, tell the people in the city to cease from doing work. Shlishit Badlik Aner. The third one is to light the candle. Divrei Rabbi Natan. That's the position of Rabbi Natan, that these are the three tkiot that are blown. Rabbi Yehuda and the Siomer. Shlishit Lachlotu Tfilin. The third one is to take off your tfilin. You're not allowed to wear a tfilin on Shabbat, so you have to remove the tfilin prior to Shabbat, so you're close to the tefillin. V'shoheh k'day tzliyat dag katan. Then you have to wait the amount of time it takes to roast a small fish, o k'day la big pat patanur, or to put up the bread, dough, into the oven, on the walls of the oven, that's how they baked it, and obviously you krom panav, that its crust will come on before Shabbat, which we saw in the first parak, that's the amount of time you need that to get that far along before you can leave it going into the Shabbat. V'tokeya umeria v'tokeya v'shovet. And then they blow the shofar, they blow a tkiah, tshuah, tkiah, shovet, and that's Shabbat. So the 6 tkiot here, you have tkiah rishonah, shniah, shlishit, and then you have the latter 3, which is tkiah, tshuah, tkiah, that gets you the 6. The Rambam reads this literally, that there are three tkiot, and then the last series is tkiya, tshuva, tkiya. Rashi over here says that all the series here are tkiya, tshuva, tkiya, which means the first three are tkiya, tshuva, tkiya. Not tkiya, 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 three in a row, even that's what it sounds like in the Gemara, it sounds like this further on. He says it's tkiya, tshuva, then tkiya, and then the last series together in one shot, you blow tkiya, tshuva, tkiya. The Rambam, on the other hand, believes that the first three are actually tkiyot, and only the last series is tkiya, tshuva, tkiya. That's a difference in their opinion about exactly how this is blown. Now, this is important, because if you actually go today to the corner wall between the southern and western walls of the Kotel is the Kotel HaMaravi, if you go to where the southern excavations are today, the Davidson Center, on the southern wall, there's a corner there. There's a stone that's on the floor there that fell from above. On it, that stone is written that that was the Makom HaTokeya of the one who blew the trumpet on Erev Shabbat. The city in that time was the upper city, was out to the southwest, where the Jewish quarter is today. That's where the old city was. He used to go up on the roof by the Mikdash. From that corner, he would blow the shofar for exactly this, the Shesh Tkiot. What's mentioned here is the practice, and they have a stone that has written at the Tokeya. So if you go over there, you can look for that stone. You can look for their writing there, that's where they blew the shofar, for exactly what's described here, to have the am seize from Milacha. Now that's the idea of the siren that goes off, comes from this, right? Amar Rabbi Shemim Gamliel, manasim labavliim. What are we going to do with the Babylonians? Shetukim umeriim vishoftim. At this last part of the series, they blow a tkiyah and a tshuva, and then they stop doing work. If they're going to seize from Milacha at the end of Meriim, then it's tukim meriim, avalu chamisha, you only have five blasts here. Ela tokim, v'chozrim tokim u'merian. Toch merian. They blow tkiya, tkiya, tshuva. And then they stop the melacha. So the tshuva is the sign of the melacha. Then they stop the melacha and the merian. Minhag v'tayim b'yadayim. We can't stop them. That's not the right way to do it. They should do tkiya, tshuva, tkiya. Instead they do tkiya, tkiya, tshuva. But that's their minhag and we're not going to stop them from doing that. Matni lei Rav Yehuda le Rav Yitzchak Brei. Shnia l'hadlik ne'et aner. The second blast tells you to light the candles. Come on. Who's that like? Look, Rabbi Natan. Look, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. It's not like Rabbi Natan who says lighting the candles is the third blast, right? And look, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is the third one for moving tefillin, which sounds like he lights the candles after that in the last series, or right after he puts everything out, takes care of the last things, and then he lights the candles. So it can't be that second one. Who's that light? Come on, look, Rabbi Natan. Look, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Elish lishit adlika tener. Third one to light the candles. Come on, that's like Rabbi Natan. So it must be that the second one's not right. It means the third one. And who says to light the candles on the third blast? That is Rabbi Natan. Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel. Sheish tkiot tokim erev Shabbat. There's six blasts that you blow on erev Shabbat. Hitkol l'tkoat tkiya rishonah. You blow the first blast. Nimnu'u amdim besadeh mila ador milachrosh masod kol milachad. Workers in the field stopped hoeing, plowing, doing any work. And then they come in from the fields. Ven akrovim rasheim likanes. Those that are in the city cannot go back home yet. Until those that are in the field come in, and then everybody enters together. The reason for that is that because if later on somebody comes in, they don't know if he was working in the field or in the city, and they think he worked past the time that he was supposed to work. So if they all come in together, then there's no chashash here. The stores are still open, which you see munuchim, and the doors or the windows, they used to have the equivalent of what we call shutters. They used to take them off, and then they used to put out their wares on those shutters. At the end of the day, they used to close them up. You know, like they bring down the trisim today. So they close them up. The second blast, then they close up shop. The hot items are still on the stovetop. And the kderot are also on top of the kira. He blows the third blast. Then you take whatever is on the fire, you take it off. And then you put into atmana, anything you want to put into atmana, v'hidlik ha-madlik, and then you light candles. Then, v'shoheh, k'dei tzliyat dag katanu, k'dei la'bik pat tatanur, you wait the amount of time it takes to roast the fish, a little fish, or to put the dough into the oven, v'tokeo maria, v'tokeo v'shoveit, and then he blows those last three blasts, and that is Shabbat. That's the beginning of Shabbat. So, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Shamati, shimbad adlik achar sheish tkiyot, if you want to light after the six tkiyot, madlik. It's like the 18 minutes today. Shkia is not till 18 minutes later. So candle lighting is 18 minutes, but I know I have 18 minutes left. So over here, you know that you have an amount of time afterwards, which is from the time that the third blast is given. But, Because after he makes those last three blasts, the shofar is muksa, and he has to put it away. So he has to have enough time to get from where he is to home, put the shofar away. So you have an extra time there until shkia. So marlo imkei natatech l'derech l'shurim. That makes it subjective. How far does he live from here? What's it going to be? People are going to now start playing around times. We don't do that. Halach is objective. They have a storage place up there, and he puts the shofar into the storage right there. There he places the shofar. Because you're not allowed to carry the shofar of the chatzitzrot. And the chatzitzrot trumpets on Shabbat, because they're musical instruments, can't carry them on Shabbat, so they put them away there. So I'm going to stop here, but just want to note here that this happens to have a heavy influence on my loket about when Shabbat starts. When you light the candles for Shabbat, is at the beginning of Shabbat. So the Bahag is the main opinion here about the fact that when you light the candles, the Ran also says the same thing, that when you light the Shabbat candles, that's Shabbat. That's the beginning of Shabbat. Once you've done that, everything is done. You can't do any more malacha. The Ramban is the one who argues on that. The Ramban says, no, the lighting of the Shabbat candles is not the beginning of Shabbat. How can he prove it? So he has a number of proofs. One of his proofs is the fact that lighting candles is a malacha. So how could the start of Shabbat be done by doing a malacha itself? How can you start Shabbat with lighting candles? That's number one. Number two is our Gemara over here. Our Gemara over here says that you light the candles in this Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, and then afterwards you have time to roast a little fish and to put dough into the oven. That's what Rashi says. You can still do those items. You can still do that even after you've lit the candles. That shows you that you can do a malacha even after you've lit the candles. That's the Ramban's proof to the fact that the lighting of the candles is not the beginning of Shabbat. Lighting candles is the kavod of Shabbat. Shabbat only starts. I mean, even if you made the bracha, I mean, it sounds like the Ramban, it wouldn't be. According to others, if you make the bracha already, that's the beginning of Shabbat. But the lighting of the candles of Shabbat is kavod Shabbat. That's not the beginning of Shabbat. The beginning of Shabbat is when you mekabel the Shabbat. The Rabban and the Ran believe, no, lighting of candles, that's the beginning of Shabbat. So how do they answer what the Ramban says? Well, with regards to the malacha, they say, this is the last malacha you're doing. You're showing that this is the beginning of Shabbat by doing one more malacha, that's for Shabbat. That's the lighting of the candles. That's the final malacha. So that's why it works. They also, what about over here? It says over here that you can do tzliat dag and you can put bread into the oven. Not literally that you can do that, but the amount of time that it takes to do that, that's how long you waited. Not that you should be able to doing that, but the amount of time, that's how much you have to wait. So it's not literally you're doing the malacha. Their proof is also from here, which is, over here it says that choletz tefillin, and then he lights the candles. Why does he take off his tefillin before he lights the candles? If the lighting the candles wasn't the start of Shabbat, it'd be better to light the candles and then take your tefillin off afterwards. It must be that the lighting the candles is the beginning of Shabbat, and that's why he has to take off his tefillin before he lights the candles. So both of them bring proofs from this Gemara as to whether lighting the candles is really the beginning of Shabbat or not the beginning of Shabbat. Again, we saw before the machlok between the Rambam and Rashi over here as to when the way the blowings work. There was tkiah, truah, tkiah, and then tkiah, truah, tkiah. That's Rashi. But the Rambam, who believes that it was tkiah, 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 and then at the end it was tkiah, truah, tkiah. The Gold Mamoniot brings over there that today we don't have the tkiot, that the equivalent for us today is barchu. And we say barchu and shul, that is Kabbalat HaShabbat. Obviously that's in their time where they had barchu before shkia. Today, that we don't say barchu way until way after shkia. Obviously you're mekabel Shabbat, you're forced to make mekabel Shabbat earlier. You know, somewhat of an issue. Their Kabbalat Shabbat was really before Shabbat. And then they had barchu even before the onset of shkia. But barchu would have the equivalent effect as blowing of the shofar to stop in lacha. And therefore, the halacha lemaisa, what comes out today is that if you actually are, for instance, passing a minyan, or you come late to shul, and they say barchu, and you say barchu, even though it's not Shabbat yet, you may no longer daven mincha. Because you've already been mekabel Shabbat by saying barchu, it's the equivalent of the blowing of the shofar, and you can't say mincha anymore. So if you're going down to the kotel, we have many minyonim going on at the same time, and you're coming to daven, and it's still light up, but there's somebody already davening ma'ariv, and they say barchu. If you answer to that barchu, you'd be in a problem where you've already been mekabel Shabbat, and you can't daven mincha anymore. So you just have to be careful with these issues in terms of kabbalat Shabbat, because once you start Shabbat, obviously you can't do any more malacha, but you'll also be prevented from davening mincha anymore. Okay, we'll stop here.